Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr
week, we're going to be doing episode 56, our E3 wrap-up.
E3 wrap-up.
Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
As you may have gotten from our episode title this week, we are going to be wrapping up our coverage of E3 2014. So in the interest of our time and yours, let's get started with some of this news. Slackkick, if you could get us started.
We heard from Nordic Games that they have acquired the THQ trademark, and they will be able to publish games under the THQ brand. Most people assume this means that the next MX vs. ATV game, which is MX vs. ATV Supercross, will be published under the THQ name, as well as hopefully a new Darksiders game if they actually make one. We would expect to see it under the THQ trademark.
That's great. That's great. You know, we talked about that, obviously, in our ongoing coverage of the THQ kerfuffle.
Yes, we did.
Just that, you know, Nordic had really made out like a bandit, picked up a lot of these titles. So it's cool to see them picking up the name as well. And, you know, we're very likely to see new iterations of these franchises under the THQ name.
THQ lives on. Yuja does not.
Womp, womp, womp. We also have news here. You may recall during Sony's press event that it was announced that players on the PlayStation 4 playing Far Cry 4 would be able to let people join their multiplayer games online, even if they didn't have a copy of Far Cry 4. We now have a little bit of insight as to how that's going to work. Slackkick, if you'd like to explain this to our listeners?
It's basically a time demo. So what you do is you download a client that basically includes all of the multiplayer content, and you'll be able to play multiplayer with your buddy for a while, but it's essentially a time demo. So if you like it, then you can buy it with your progress and everything still saved and enjoy the game that way.
Yeah, I think this is actually pretty cool. Players who have Far Cry 4, they'll get like 10 invites, basically.
Yes.
And, you know, so they can invite up to 10 people to play the game with them. Not 10 concurrently, but, you know, 10 overall. And each of those 10 people, while playing, will have access to the entire game outside of the single-player story parts.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's cool. A lot of people are complaining, like, oh, this isn't what they promised, but, you know, they didn't really promise anything. A lot of people were just assuming, so.
You know what they promised was that people who didn't own the game could play online with people who did. Do you know what we're getting? People who don't own the game can play online with people who do. I think they're making good on their promise pretty well.
Oh, I'm not complaining. I mean, I'm not a huge Far Cry fan, but a lot of people are crying foul.
Yeah. We also have here a follow-up regarding Zelda. Slackkick, if you'd like to take this, I know how you are about Zelda.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed because we got confirmation from Eiji Aonuma-san saying that the character in the Zelda U trailer is Link and is male. And, you know, we had seen a lot of speculation. We had talked about it on our Nintendo episode about how maybe it's Zelda, maybe it's Linka, a female Link or whatever. But he was saying, oh, you know, the character's supposed to represent the player, blah, 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 cop-out answer. I'm disappointed. I'm still excited for the other potential stuff we're seeing, like, you know, the possible interesting setting stuff we talked about, and just how they're going to handle open world. But I think it's really a missed opportunity, especially with the way that people are reacting to the Zelda playable character news for Hyrule Warriors.
Well, and that ties in here a little bit. You know, reporters have been asking Aonuma-san a lot in the last week if we'll ever see playable female representation in the mainline Zelda series. And Aonuma has been saying, you know, that Nintendo's very interested in seeing how Hyrule Warriors is received and how specifically the female playable characters in Hyrule Warriors are received.
Which is kind of shitty that it should have to rely on, oh, let's see how it's received. It's like, no, just do it, damn it.
You know, I'm willing to go both ways, because on one hand, yeah, we definitely should have more female representation in games. I say this every effing day. I say it on every podcast, basically. But I am, again, you know, it's sort of like we were talking about last week, you know, with Tomodachi Life and, you know, some other stuff. Nintendo has been taking steps to sort of see, like, if these non-conventional ideas will float. And so here we have, and, you know, you have to take a look sort of at the industry at large. Oftentimes, female-led IPs and iterations of games really do underperform compared to the others.
That's true. And, I mean, we've also got to consider a lot of the people at Nintendo right now are kind of the old guard, and we've got a lot of young talent coming up through Nintendo, so...
That is a absolutely true statement. We're going to talk about that a little bit more when we talk about Kersplush's dev team.
Splatoon.
Splatoon, whatever. Oh, yeah.
Kersplush was the indie title on the 3DS eShop.
Quite right, absolutely. Specifically, I just want to say, I already feel that it's progress that Nintendo's opening a dialogue and saying, you know, we want to see how this actually plays out with playable female characters in Hyrule Warriors, you know? And again, it might not be what we all want, it might not be the smashing victory we want and deserve for female representation, but frankly, it's still more than we're getting from most other publishers.
That's true.
So, you know, I'm still hoping for a miracle. I'm still hoping for this to have been a trick and for this really to be Zelda or Linka, as people say, and that, you know, they just don't want to spoil the plot too early or whatever. But even if they are being completely open right now, this is Link, there's no female twist. You know, I feel very inspired and heartened by their comments that they do have their eyes open on how this Hyrule Warriors situation plays out. Because, again, that's more than we're getting from most developers.
Yeah, at least they're not like, hey, we don't have time to program female characters.
Yeah, right?
So also in Nintendo follow-up news, Miyamoto-san has been talking about that he is thinking about including the Project Guard prototype into the next Star Fox game. He's kind of viewing the idea of the next Star Fox as being like the Thunderbirds TV series, using a bunch of different vehicles and like that. Some sort of adventures would involve mech piloting, and some would involve ship-based classic Star Fox piloting, which sounds cool. So, you know, we might be seeing Project Guard kind of folded into that.
And, you know, it's funny that he's saying that because there was already a very strong Thunderbirds influence on the Star Fox series. Specifically, look at the cutscenes for Star Fox 64, which previously interviews with Miyamoto-san had indicated that those were inspired by the old Thunderbirds serials. We actually did have, you know, other piloting experiences other than just the R-Wings in Star Fox 64, for example. There was the sub stage and the tank stage.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm trying to figure out is that this article on Silicon Era keeps talking about Project Guard, but that was the cute camera game. So I wonder if he was meaning to refer, or if the translation got mixed up and they were talking about Project Giant Robot.
Probably. Although, again, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see all of them rolled into the same game and just different elements of one game.
That's true. I kind of would hope that the Project Guard, the one with the little robots and the spy cameras, I would like to see that. It's just a separate game, but...
You see, I don't have strong feelings about it being a separate game. I would be fine with it being a separate game, but I'd be just as open to it being like, oh, these are cameras that are, you know, on the outside of a giant robot, and you have little wormies climbing up your robot. Better look at your knee camera and make sure you shoot all the little worms off your knee.
As long as it's like a... Maybe it's a different mode or something.
As long as the gameplay is intact, I'm fine. I'm excited to play that game for its gameplay.
Yeah, so new Star Fox might be Giant Robo Fox.
So you recall we said we were going to talk about Splatoon. Well, we're there already. Miyamoto-san has also discussed that the developers behind Splatoon are actually taken from the core Animal Crossing team.
Yeah, it's Animal Crossing team, some of the younger staff at Nintendo, the new guard, as we've been saying. And we had first been under the impression that it might be like partnership with an American team, but that's actually not the case. So it kind of carries on from what we were talking about, where Miyamoto is taking more of a mentorship role and kind of letting the younger talent in Nintendo just do what they will. And I mean, a lot of people talking about Splatoon that, you know, maybe weren't really super paying attention to Nintendo before, so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it seems like a really just slam dunk to me for Nintendo to leverage their existing staff this way. That Animal Crossing team, you know, actually, as I recall hearing, had a lot more female representation on the team than is necessarily normal for Nintendo Studios. That came about when there was the keynote about the development of, was it Wild World? Or New Leaf, I'm sorry.
Yeah, New Leaf.
So I'm really interested in seeing how this plays out. But it does sort of explain, if you recall, you know, there was actually, like, female characters in Splatoon already.
Yeah.
So this, it sort of, you know, tracks that Nintendo, of all people, is really trying to push this female representation in games thing. And I have so much respect to them for that.
Oh, definitely.
And, yeah, looking forward to Splatoon. I really hope that this can be, you know, another grand slam under that team's belt.
Me too.
In Persona news.
Lots of Persona news this week.
Yeah, well, we're just going to try to get through this real quick because this is little stuff. The pre-order bonuses for Persona 4 Arena Ultimax have been announced. You will be getting, if you pre-order, an inflatable punching bag.
Of Teddy.
Now, if you have ever wanted to hug or punch Teddy, this is the time to do it.
I'm just going to make him, like, roll around randomly like he does in the game.
Ah! In addition, you'll also get a set of 11 Persona tarot cards.
Yes! For Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth, you will get the other 11 tarot cards. This is for the Persona Q Premium Edition, which comes with a 3DS XL case and tarot cards, although I do believe that the tarot cards will also come with the first print of the regular edition of the game.
Yes, that is true.
Also in Persona Q news, we've got confirmation that the story in Persona Q is canon. You might be familiar with the story involving Persona 3 and Persona 4 teams, and they've had crossovers in Persona 4 Arena, so this is also canon. So for those who were kind of curious about it, who take Persona canon super serious, then this might answer your question, or maybe not.
And you know, it's also worth mentioning that the PS Vita game Persona Dancing All Night is also canon.
That's true.
So, you know, between the games that were announced at the Persona event a couple months back, we really, because, you know, I had thought for sure that Dancing All Night and Q were not going to be canon. I thought they'd be side stories or, you know,
AUs. Well, Q takes place during the Culture Festival, right?
Yes. So it's really interesting to see, you know, that this is going to be canon. It's going to affect the overall story. And, you know, in theory, later games in these series and Persona 5, if there's any crossover, are, you know, going to take all this stuff into account.
True.
We also have a follow-up here relating to the news that Bayonetta 2 is going to be releasing on the Wii U, along with a remake of Bayonetta 1. Or I should say port, it's not quite a full remake, but in any event, in Europe, there is going to be a limited edition of Bayonetta 2 that will come with Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2, each on individual discs.
Oh.
The regular edition will just be Bayonetta 2 in Europe. In North America, it looks like we'll be getting one disc and an eShop download code for Bayonetta 1.
Interesting.
And on the eShop, Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2 will be available for separate purchase, and while this promotion is running, if you buy one, you will get the applicable discount to download the other one on the eShop.
Oh, that's great news.
So, you know, there was a lot of people asking sort of how this was going to work. All I know is, because Japan is also getting a separate disc for Bayonetta 1, I want to know what I can do to get a limited edition with a disc for Bayonetta 1, because I'd love to have that on a disc.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's the kind of game I'd probably multiple dip on and buy on a disc and download.
Same here.
But that's neither here nor there.
So we've got some follow-up on Cat Lateral Damage, which, as you might remember, is the game where you're a kitty knocking shit over. The developer of Cat Lateral Damage... The developer of Cat Lateral Damage is looking to finish the full version of the game and raise $40,000 on Kickstarter. And the full version of the game is going to have features such as chasing mice, hacking up a hairball, hiding under the bed, eating catnip, and laying in the sun.
Aww.
And the storyline will also be expanded. You're trying to reach a fancy mansion at the end of the street, and there will also be multiple playable cats.
Oh my gosh, multiple playable cats? Next gen confirmed.
Yes. And in each house that you're going through in the way to the fancy mansion, you're trying to make a mess, And then you nap in a box before you move on to the next house.
Speaking of making a mess and boxes, we got confirmation here that in Metal Gear Solid 5, the horses are going to poop in real time.
Great segue.
Thanks.
Also, the box is back. If you want to read more about Metal Gear Solid 5, you should check out this link to Silicon Era on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We mostly reported it because of the pooping in real time.
Yeah, honestly, it's cool that the horses
Did you know that the horses are now pooping in real time.
I think it's really funny that the horses are going to have, like, digestive cycles programmed, but that's just the kind of attention to detail that makes these games shine.
That's just what Kojima-san does.
Poops in real time?
Well, hopefully.
Let's see. We have here a follow-up. You may recall we talked a little bit about the Harvest Moon kerfuffle.
The drama.
Ooh, drama, girl. Slackick, if you'd like to talk a little bit about how Harvest Moon The Lost Valley for 3DS is going to differentiate itself from its parent series?
Yes. Instead of just relying on the crop harvesting
that
and animal, just relying on harvesting crops and tending to your animals, you're going to be able to kind of build the world around you, Minecraft style. And this is hopefully going to differentiate it further from the Story of Seasons series from Marvelous and Xseed, who of course are taking on the actual Harvest Moon series. You know, that's the actual Harvest Moon team. But I think both will be worth playing. So this is, in the end, a good thing.
Excellent, excellent. We also have here word from Sony that the features in the PlayStation 4 operating system that are still not available nearly a year after its release, but that were announced before the console even came out, are still on their way. In particular, of course, we're sort of talking about how, you know, supposedly you're going to be able to give control of your game over to your friends on the internet, like mid-game, like sort of like handing over a gameplay session, or about how we were supposed to be able to sort of put our console to sleep and then wake it up without, like, shutting down and ending operation, sort of like what we do with 3DS and PS Vita. These features are still coming, according to Sony. They do still have teams working on these features, they're just not ready yet.
Yeah, so that's good news. Silicon Era published an interview with Grasshopper Manufacturer CEO Suda51, our favorite guy,
well,
one of our favorite guys. And he was talking about how the game that was originally announced as Lily Bergamo, or am I saying that right? Bergamo, has transformed into Let It Die. So those games are one and the same. And really, it's just that Lily Bergamo kind of transformed into Let It Die. He was talking about how the features of, like, when a player dies, that their data becomes enemy data. And so basically anything that had been really revealed about Lily Bergamo is kind of, like, it's a new game. It's a separate game, but it has developed into something new.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this, and the more we learn, the cooler it sounds. It almost sounds like Dark Souls meets, like, it sort of sounds like Dark Souls meets the multiplayer functionalities of Zombie U, and I'm really here for that. You may recall Zombie U would draw from your friends' games to generate zombies based on, like, what packs and what items they had. Really cool forward-thinking stuff, and kind of similar to what we're going to be seeing here in Let It Die, so I'm really stoked.
Yeah, and of course this is a free-to-play game, and so he's kind of being hush-hush about how it's going to be implemented as far as microtransactions. But there's a little quote that I like is that they asked him about how Let It Die looks a lot different than the other Gung-Ho games, and he said he likes to think of Gung-Ho as Disneyland, and how you have, like, Haunted Mansions and Star Wars and Fantasyland in the same park. So I love that he used a Disney metaphor.
Of course you did, girl. We also have here news that there is a romantic comedy manga spin-off coming based on Dragon Quest X.
Cute.
Now, this isn't going to take place within the game world. Instead, it's going to be super meta about two game players from the same guild or whatever who have been playing together for a long time and decide to finally meet romantically. And, you know, of course, being a romance manga, I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of twists and turns, and probably, like, a dark childhood, and maybe, like, some time in a hospital where someone met, like, a psychotic ex-boyfriend.
Oh, dear.
Probably that person's going to come and, like, secretly try to convince someone that they're crazy. lazy or dying or kill their teacher or go to art school with them and pretend to be their own twin.
Are these all manga plots that you're talking about?
Yes.
You'll need to tell me later.
I love romance manga. I'm so excited.
Wow. In other news that is less dramatic, Mario Kart 8 Mercedes DLC is coming to the U.S. and Europe.
Excellent. That's cool, man.
You want to be rolling in your Mercedes as Mario or Peach or Pink Gold Peach or...
Fuck Pink Gold Peach.
All right, then.
We also have here news that Bayonetta, Bloody Fate, this is, of course, the theatrical-length Bayonetta anime film, is being localized in the U.S. and Canada by Funimation.
Yes.
The film is going to play at Anime Expo this year. That takes place, of course, the first weekend of July. And they're going to be playing the film in full along with a Q&A session by the film's director on Saturday, July 5th at 8:15. So if you're in Southern California and you're going to AX this year, check this out and let us know what you think. I've seen the movie. I think it's actually really good and super pretty, mostly. But I'm always interested in hearing other people's opinions.
Yes. We got some more Theater Rhythm Curtain Call news. There's going to be Advent Children Final Fantasy VII tune, and then Krill from Final Fantasy V. Is that how you say her name?
That's always how I've said it.
Okay, so she will be a downloadable character. So, you know, all of this stuff I'm hoping will be available at the American, Western, North American, European, whatever launch we get in the West. I don't like to always just say U.S., so I am excited because
just saying localization or North America works.
Yeah. But, you know, there's already a lot of content on the game itself.
Yeah, there's like 200 songs or something.
Plus all of this DLC, so I am excited.
And man, I have to tell you, you know, I know that there's a lot of DLC for this game, but, you know, much like Rock Band, I love when music games have a lot of DLC,
mm-hmm.
and you can just pick and choose. Like, you don't have to own every song.
You're like, oh, I don't need anything for Final Fantasy VII.
Well, for me, that's certainly true, although I will probably get the Advent Children version of One Winged Angel. But, you know, I look at something like Krill. I'm not going to buy Krill, but, you know, we were talking about Orlando from Final Fantasy Tactics last week. I'm going to buy that.
Yeah.
Like, just buy the songs and characters you want and forget the rest. I see a lot of people complaining online like, oh, I hate all this DLC content that should have been on the game in the first place. But, like, I don't know. I feel like 200 songs on the cartridge is enough. And giving us the option to expand at a reasonable price, I feel like that's okay. That is downloadable content that I'm absolutely okay with.
Indeed. We got confirmation from Sega that the Sonic Boom games for Wii U and 3DS are coming to Japan as Sonic Toon.
Sonic Toon!
Sonic Toon! Sonic Toon! And that's about it. I didn't realize, like, because I guess I haven't paid too much attention. I guess they got subtitles, Sonic Boom Rise of Lyric for Wii U, and Sonic Boom Shattered Crystal for 3DS. I wasn't aware that they had received subtitles, but okay.
They had, yeah. We also have here news that Sunset Overdrive, the extremely fun-looking Xbox One game, is going to support a huge spectrum of character customization options, which are going to be completely free to customize, not free in terms of money, but free in terms of there's not going to be any kind of gender specification on any specific clothes. So if you have a dude avatar but you want to wear a dress, they are absolutely going to let that happen.
One of the guys working on the game said in the preview video, if you want to be a dude in a skirt, you can be a dude in a skirt.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely great. You know, and they specifically announced this in a trailer that a lot of people felt were poking fun at Ubisoft's claims that there aren't going to be playable female characters in Assassin's Creed Unity because it would require, quote, a lot of extra production work.
Yep, and this preview has a female character wearing an assassin's cloak.
Yeah, I mean, it really does very clearly seem like to Ubisoft. And I gotta say, I already think Sunset Overdrive looks like a great game. This just makes me want it and like it even more.
Indeed.
We have another downloadable character for Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate.
Oh yeah? Why don't you tell us about her?
This time we have Phase 4 coming. She is a clone of Kasumi, both in terms of gameplay and in the storyline, literally being a clone of Kasumi.
If it wasn't Dead or Alive, I would be rolling my eyes, but for Dead or Alive, it seems pretty par for the course.
And last but not least, we have here a pretty nice little poll quote from Nintendo of America President and COO Reggie Fils-Aimé. My bad. He believes that the Wii U has, quote, a very long life ahead of it. It's got great content coming that will help define the platform. This, of course, is, I'm only bringing it up in terms of this follow-up simply because I get so many of you beautiful and lovely listeners out there saying so many good things about the Wii U, but then indicating that you're worried that it's going to be, you know, canceled midstream, and aborted like some kind of Virtual Boy situation. And I just think it's important that we're seeing Nintendo representatives and higher-ups explicitly saying that is not the case, that they are going to keep supporting this console, they still believe in it, they're still going to produce top-tier content that is hopefully going to move systems. And, you know, I have to say, especially so hot on the heels of Mario Kart 8, I absolutely believe them. I do think that they're going to do their best, and, you know, I can only say I really hope their best involves more fucking virtual console support.
Indeed. You know, I was talking about this with the boys over on Koopa Club, which I guested on the other night.
Oh, yeah?
And I just think a lot of people forget that, you know, the GameCube didn't really push a lot of units either, but they didn't give up on the GameCube, so.
And they ultimately made a profit. I mean, that's the thing to keep in mind about the GameCube. They certainly didn't make as much money as they would have liked, but they still made money. And my understanding now is that the Wii U is finally moving into the territory where it is beginning to make money. So, fingers crossed, let's hope that keeps happening. And, you know, things can pretty much only go up. I mean, or really, really, really down, but let's not think that way.
Let's not. Why don't we go ahead and move on to...
Oh my god.
News. Oh my god. News.
Oh my god, news.
So some of the most exciting Square Enix news did not come from E3 proper, but rather was revealed in Jump Magazine. This comes in the form of Nintendo 3DS title Final Fantasy Explorers. It is a game that lets you select from multiple jobs, each with their own role, such as Black Mage, White Mage, Knight, and Monk.
Now, the thing that you're really missing here is the super exciting part of what this game is, which is basically a Final Fantasy take on Monhun.
Yes!
Like, this is a multiplayer, you know, monster hunting game. You have, like, a hub city. You go out on missions to hunt monster in order to grind gear and loot and resources in order to make better gear and loot and resources while following sort of a storyline based on those, like, story missions.
It's nice to see that they abandoned that little chibi style that they were using for all of the Nintendo DS Final Fantasy content.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really feel like the chibi style is sort of based on a need to use fewer polygons on the 3DS, or at least a perceived need, because certainly other companies don't do that.
You mean on the DS?
Well, yes, I mean, I think it was born on the DS, but I think they brought it over to the 3DS because that was already what their pipeline looked like. And I mean, I think you see that mostly in stuff like Bravely Default, for example.
Okay, yeah.
Which is clearly still based on what they did on the DS and their game engines for DS games. You know, the Final Fantasy III Remake, Final Fantasy IV Remake, Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light, which, of course, is the immediate predecessor to Bravely Default. But I'm excited to see this art style go in a different direction, and I'm excited to see them sort of take a chance with this gameplay and to sort of go in a different direction with, like, a more of an action-style game. But to have, you know, also a Monster Hunter-style game with Final Fantasy jobs, like a job system, man, depending on how they implement the job system, this could be, like, a whole different wrinkle to hunting games. And with, you know, roles that are more specifically, more distinctly devoted to support, specifically White Mage, than you typically see in these kinds of games, it's just very exciting to me. And, you know, I was going to say when reading about this online in preparation for this episode a week ago, I was going to say if this game comes over, I'll get it immediately. If it doesn't, this is the kind of thing that would really make me put my money where my mouth is. You know, I talk about importing a lot, but it typically turns out like, well, as cool as that sounds, I'm not going to shell out money for it, you know, to import, because that shit's expensive. This is the kind of thing I would import, because I love monster hunting. I love Final Fantasy. I love job systems. I feel like there's such tremendous, tremendous opportunity and potential here. And fortunately, I won't have to because the name Final Fantasy Explorers has already been trademarked this week in North America and Europe.
Unfortunately, it's just for a mobile social name. No, I'm totally kidding.
Fuck you, you ass! So, you know, I just nearly fell into a rant hole. Let's move on. Slackick, what else you got for us?
Well, we've heard details now about the next Adventure Time game developed by WayForward. It's going to be Adventure Time, The Secret of the Nameless Kingdom, and it's drawing its inspiration primarily from The Legend of Zelda. And it's going to be a blend of dungeon puzzles and light RPG elements, accessible for children but made to appeal to every demographic that enjoys Adventure Time.
And my understanding from the studio that's making this game, that's Little Orbit, is that it specifically is going to be taking its cues from 1992's The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Yes.
So, you know, that's actually, to me, very, very exciting. They apparently got feedback on this style of game after their last game came out and was highly criticized, not only by fans, but also from Adventure Time creator Pendleton Ward. He was apparently not a big fan of Explore the Dungeon because I don't know.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer because that looked cool.
You know, it is kind of a bummer, but at the same time, if it drives this product to being a more filling gameplay experience, that's awesome.
Indeed. The classic side-scrolling shoot 'em up Tengai is coming back as a smartphone game.
That's exciting. You know, that was one of those old 1990s side-scrolling shmups.
And it's actually, I see, coming back. It is out now on iOS and Android.
As a free-to-play, you said?
I don't see any details here about free-to-play, but you should check out the iOS store or the Android Google Play shop, whatever it's called. I don't know.
We also have word here that Natsume is going to be bringing two more games to the Virtual Console on 3DS. That's going to be Lufia, The Legend Returns, which was the Game Boy Color exclusive installment of that well-loved JRPG series, as well as Harvest Moon 2. Unfortunately, on their Facebook, Natsume was asked about the possibility of Harvest Moon 64 releasing on the Wii U Virtual Console. Unfortunately, that was flatly denied with the statement, sadly, Harvest Moon 64 won't be appearing.
Ooh. We have some information about the Fatal Frame movie adaptation. It's going to be about a strange curse that only affects girls. It takes place in a school dorm located in a secluded mountain town where a young girl keeps to herself until an incident occurs on campus. She hears a voice saying, "Please lift my curse." And there's a girl in the photograph looking just like her. Sounds spoopy.
Ooh! In other spoopy video game adaptation movie news, we have word here that Legendary Digital Media's feature-length film based on Capcom's Dead Rising series is going to be exclusive to Sony's Crackle channel.
Interesting.
Of course, after its run on Crackle, it will then be released on DVD, Blu-ray, and to, you know, television outlets, as movies typically are. But it's interesting to see that I would have to assume Crackle has put some amount of money toward this production. We don't yet have any word on a director of this film, but as soon as we hear more, we will let you know.
I hope it has all three of the studs.
Hey!
Some of you out there might be familiar with Cuphead, which is a cool-looking indie game that takes its inspiration from early 1930s cartoons. It's a run-and-gun action game that's going to be due out next year. And in addition to Xbox One and Steam, the developers, Studio MDHR, are hoping to release a Master System cartridge. You would get it for Master System, don't lie.
I would. I absolutely would.
If you're not familiar with Cuphead, check it out. It looks just great. If you're a fan of, like, the early Disney Silly Symphonies, Merry Melody, Looney Tunes, which are obviously not Disney, I know, but, you know, that early style of classic animation, then you'll probably love what this is shaping up to be.
Indeed. We also have word here that the cult classic Out of This World is releasing on PlayStation platforms next week. So by the time you hear this, it'll be available, I suspect. In addition to that, though, it's also worth mentioning that this game is available this week on the 3DS and Wii U platforms, and my understanding is that it's also coming to Xbox platforms next week.
That's great.
So, you know, this is a real classic. We've talked about it here a lot on the show. It's also known overseas as Another World rather than Out of This World. If you've never played this, you really owe it to yourself. It's a really amazing exploration 2D game that graphically was unlike anything else in the world, basically. And still, in terms of ambience and puzzle solving and complexity and even storytelling, it still just does stuff that no other game does. It's really a remarkable experience, and I highly recommend you check it out.
Definitely. So Maple Story is getting a spin-off, but the interesting thing is that this spin-off occurs in the game. This is seen in the form of Maple Story French Story, first spin-off. It is a school life sim fantasy game.
Oh my gosh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I kind of might need to go and get Maple Story right now.
Do you want to have a maple night?
I don't know, can we get maple donuts?
I was just going to say we'll go to Krispy Kreme, we'll get some maple custard-filled donuts. We'll make a night out of it.
Wait, why would you put maple on a custard donut? That's sinful.
No, that's a real thing. Getting a maple donut with custard in it? They're
no,
super good.
No, custard donuts should have chocolate on them.
Okay.
Maple donuts should be plain.
Will you have one just to see?
Maybe.
Ah! We gonna do it. Not do it, but we gonna have donuts.
Whoa.
Anyway, in less awful news, maybe, the Rhythm of Fighters has been announced for mobile by SNK Playmore. This is a rhythm game based on the well-loved King of Fighters franchise. No news on price or release or even gameplay, really, has yet been announced, other than it appears to be a game done in the style of the older Kings of Fighters games, you know, with sort of like an overlay of rhythm buttons to press, not entirely dissimilar to Theater Rhythm.
Looks fun.
I'm excited, I'll be honest. I'm gonna play it.
Dragon Quest II is coming to iOS and Android in a few days, on June 26th in particular.
In Japan?
Yes, yeah, so we're seeing lots of Dragon Quest news. Not exactly the Dragon Quest news that everyone wants.
Give me Dragon Quest VII on 3DS in North America, please!
Yeah, a lot of people really, really jonesing for that.
Seriously.
In sad news, I'm surprised this is not in the Doom or Gloom, the servers for the free-to-play game Ridge Racer Driftopia are closing their doors in August.
Yeah, I didn't want to put together an entire segment for one article.
Well, it's a Ridge Racer free-to-play game.
But this is sad, even if it's not that sad. I don't really know anyone who got super into Driftopia and didn't, like, dislike it. Like, most people I know who gave it a real solid go ended up not being super thrilled after initially being impressed. So I'm not that surprised to hear this.
Yeah.
Still, I hope no one, you know, loses any jobs, and I hope Namco tries again and, you know, finds a way to make
Ridge
that work.
Ridge Racer! Womp womp.
In other unfortunate news, we see FIFA 15 coming out for the 3DS and the Wii, but not the Wii U.
What?
Yeah. FIFA 15 is going to be coming to Xbox One, PS4, and PC, as well as a quote-unquote legacy version that's going to be coming out for Xbox 360, PS3, Wii, 3DS, and Vita.
That's really weird.
The legacy version is literally the same game, like literally the same game that has been released in previous years, just with roster updates. So it's the exact same assets, exact same, you know, everything except different stats and, you know, player names and what have you. So that's really the reason for it. And from that perspective, I get it and it makes sense. But at the same time, man, you know, EA, you fucking complain and complain and complain that you can't make money on the Wii U. And then you don't fucking release shit on it timely.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I have a lot of feels about EA on the Wii U. I say that as someone who actually paid full damn price for Mass Effect 3 on Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
Like, y'all motherfuckers, don't test me. I also bought the Need for Speed game on Wii U. And it
you
was
did.
Super good!
It was good. So we've got news that Outlast is now available on the Xbox One with DLC. So,
oh, hell go, here come.
Yeah, so if you were looking forward to playing this spoopy game
and being scared shitless,
you can pick it up for $20 on the Xbox One store and also get the super spoopy Whistleblower DLC for $9.
Yeah, that game is effing terrifying. If you haven't played it, I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, I couldn't really handle it.
Aww. We also have here news that Trials Fusion, which we've talked about here on the show before, has a demo coming to Xbox One, in fact, I think this week, so it might already be up. As well as that, it now has support on the Xbox One for online tournaments. So yay!
Cool.
You know, I'm a big fan of the Trials series. I think it's really cool and a lot of fun. Somewhat reminiscent of certain aspects of the NES Excitebike. If you haven't played this game yet, you know, there's a demo now. What could you lose for checking it out?
Yeah. Kind of some sad news.
I think it's exciting news.
Well, exciting for some, sad for others. Chris Journey, the senior programmer from Supergiant Games, has moved on to the Oculus team. He's taking a new journey of his own.
Oh, okay. Well, when you say it like that, it sounds a little bittersweet. But I'm very excited. You know, this guy's obviously brilliant, super clever, outside-the-box thinker. I'm really excited for what he'll bring to the Oculus team, because he has a very interesting skill set.
Indeed. So we've got some final news here in the form of Capcom. Three Capcom tidbits that are all very interesting. The first one is that there have been some promotions in the Capcom management structure. The first person who was promoted was Naruyuki Nobuyama. He was the head of Consumer Games R&D Human Resources Division and General Manager of R&D Promotion Department. He's now a corporate officer in addition to those two positions. And so, you know, you might not have heard his name, but you've probably heard of Ryozo Sugimoto, who is the Monster Hunter producer. He is now the head of Consumer Games Development Division 3 and General Manager of Department 3.
You keep saying management. I'm like, is this like a new race of Murlocs? They come at you, they're like, Murgle, 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 papers on my desk.
Papers, please.
But go.
No, I was saying management and manager. I'm mismatching that. So he's now also a corporate officer, so.
And the company now has a new executive corporate officer, which is Hirokazu Nakabichi. Nakabachi. Ooh, girl.
Ooh, Nakabachi.
I'm doing it too. Hirokazu Nakabachi, who's going to be in charge of internal audit and IT. So that's interesting.
Indeed. Now, our next piece of Capcom news is a name that you're probably very familiar with. Captain Spike, you want to take this one?
Yoshinori Ono, whom you're probably familiar with if you're a fan of the fighting game output over at Capcom, as well as, you know, some of the stuff that he's done relating to Dead Rising and what have you in the more recent Dead Rising iterations, announced via Twitter that he was resigning from Capcom Vancouver. Now, initially when this story broke, it seemed, based on the way he had worded his tweets, which was that he was, you know, going to be taking time off to consider his future and what comes next, basically everybody believed that he was gonna be leaving Capcom altogether. He has now stated that he'll still be with Capcom, but he's going to be staying in Japan working at Capcom Japan.
Well, Lord knows they need it there.
Yeah. You know, and this is interesting because we heard a lot of word about Street Fighter V at E3. You know, nothing concrete, nothing worth reporting on exactly. But, you know, there were a lot of executives sort of talking about how Street Fighter V was something they're looking toward and starting to think about game design for. And Ono is really the guy who would be on point for that. So it was really scary to think even momentarily that maybe Ono wasn't going to be with Capcom for much longer. You know, obviously there are still a lot of conspiracy theorists out there, myself included, whom think that based on the way those tweets were phrased, that Ono is planning to leave Capcom in some way. But for now, at least, the official line is that he'll be working in Japan with Capcom for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. And let's talk about the foreseeable future of Capcom.
Well, you know, there was a motion at the 35th Ordinary General Meeting of Shareholders for Capcom, where a proposal was made to sort of put in place countermeasures in response to a large-scale purchase of shares of the company, colloquially known as a takeover defense. And what this is basically is, you know, if someone comes in and tries to sort of pursue a hostile takeover of Capcom and just, you know, outright come in, buy all their stocks away, and buy the company that way rather than through, like, official mergers and what have you.
Mm.
You know, most companies this size have a plan in order to avoid that happening. Like, if someone starts trying, this is our plan. you know, these are our liquid assets that we have to the side just in case this needs to happen, and we need money fast in order to sort of protect ourselves and buy ourselves out, in essence. Basically, Capcom's plan has now been denied by their shareholders, which means Capcom now does not have a plan in place, and they are open to being acquired this way. They are open to takeovers.
Yeah, so I haven't seen a lot of people really reporting on this. Of course, we were talking off-air, and this is not really a news story yet, but could become a news story, so...
Well, I think that's exactly why we're not seeing it popping up yet. And we're talking about it here because we're a little bit on the nerdier side here on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
But really, this is the first step of a news story. This is the kind of thing that's going to become an issue in 3 months if, or, you know, at any point in the future, if Capcom is sort of hostile, experiences a hostile takeover or is acquired in this way. You know, and what's interesting here is that we have Capcom basically at this point saying we don't have a defense for that. If you, like, openly, like, clearly the shareholders want to be purchased. It's not a, how do I say this eloquently? It's not really a surprise to anyone that Capcom is presently not in the best financial situation. We keep seeing them pump money and money and money into their mobile divisions, pulling away from profitable divisions such as their, you know, 3DS publishing, which was actually by a huge amount ahead of expectations based on Monster Hunter 4, even despite how hard Geist Crusher flopped in Japan. You know, still they brought in way more money from that division than was expected last fiscal. And still, you know, Capcom is pushing money toward mobile, and not seeing a very big return on it. So I don't think it's surprising to see that Capcom's shareholders are basically saying, please come save us, Superman.
You mean Nintendo?
Hey, man, after the way they're treating, first off, Monster Hunter in terms of helping Capcom publish, you know, in the non-Japanese parts of the world, the way they're treating Mega Man in Smash Brothers, I have to be 100% honest, as long as we could still get arcade versions of their fighting games, if Nintendo owned them, which, I mean, I think would still happen, Nintendo does arcade games, you know, I'd actually be okay with a Nintendo acquisition. I've heard a lot of people on the competitive fighting game scene say that that would be the worst possible thing for, you know, Street Fighter and the Versus series, but I actually disagree. I think having their fighting games on one platform would really result in a better competitive scene because you'd have everybody playing in the same online pool rather than half of them on Xbox and half of them on PlayStation. Yeah. And for anyone, of course, who thinks that a Nintendo console might somehow magically have a hard time with fighting games, just take a look over at Capcom vs. Tatsunoko. There's no reason why great fighting games can't happen on Nintendo consoles. So I try not to play armchair analyst too much here, but I do foresee Capcom getting bought out, and while really I see it happening by more of like an Index Corporation entity, you know, sort of someone who is not specifically invested in games but wants to be, and that's really who I see grabbing Capcom, I wouldn't be that surprised to see Nintendo or Microsoft pick them up, with Nintendo being my preference, obviously.
Yes.
So, with all of this having been said, that sort of wraps it up for our news this week. So let's get to our discussion topic. This is going to be a fast one. I really honestly think we're going to be discussing this for maybe 10 minutes, and then we're going to start with the, you know, with the other segments of the show. So, let's talk real quick about E3, Slagkick. We've already talked about E3 a lot this year.
We did.
You can, of course, listen to our archive over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Or listen to our feed over on iTunes. We did, like 6 hours of content about this event already? So let's just wrap it up with, overall, what did you think about all three contenders, now that we've seen everything there is to be seen, not just their stage shows, which is all we had seen recording our previous episodes. We also saw from Nintendo, and this needs to be said sort of separately, the announcement of, what is that, codename Steam, I think
Project
the game
Steam,
is?
Steam, yeah.
That game looks tremendous. A 3DS title, strategy game made by the Fire Emblem and Advance Wars guys, sort of in a 50s Silver Age comic book style steampunk setting.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very cool.
Yeah, Intelligent Systems.
Yeah, intelligent systems. I just didn't want to cite them by name. I thought we'd get more mileage out of talking about their game that people love. Anyway, though. Well, again, sometimes I think people, when they hear intelligent systems, don't think about sort of how amazing that studio is, because they've done these great strategy games, but they've done other games, too. Anyway, I don't want to get too far off point. Let's start with Nintendo. How do you think Nintendo did taking the entire show into perspective?
I mean, they did really well. We talked a little bit about this over on the Koopa Club episode that I guested on. And, you know, the thing that I overall took away from, not my impressions of Nintendo, but what the kind of public reception was, is that I'm really surprised that people were like, oh, they really shifted it different this year by having a streaming conference instead of doing a traditional press conference. I'm like, yeah, were you there last year? So I'm just really surprised that they're kind of only picking up on that this year. Like, did last year's Direct kind of not exist? But I mean, I think Nintendo had a very solid showing. I know that, you know, we talked about last year that maybe Nintendo's conference wasn't the strongest one because it was competing against the PS4 and Xbox One hype because, you know, they had yet to launch. I think overall Nintendo did really well. They showed some great titles. They showed a lot of behind the scenes with developers, and that's the stuff that I really like to see. And then the events they did, like the event where they invited kids of, I think, journalism people, like they invited their families along, and Miyamoto-san was showing kids how to play Nintendo, how to play Mario Maker, and I thought that was really cool. Plus all the streaming they did with the Treehouse, the Smash Tournament, I think they just really, overall was a really positive experience coming from Nintendo.
Yeah, and you know, something that I want to point out is, and you know, I read a lot of different forums, a lot of news sites, both in the sort of hobbyist sphere as well as just, you know, mainstream news sites. And I really feel like the overall reception to Nintendo at E3 this year was one of, like, victory or, like, return. Triumph is maybe the word I'm looking for. I feel like most people, exempting, you know, Ben Kuchera over at Polygon,
ooh,
and Jeremy Parrish to some degree over at US Gamer, both of whom are mainly coming after Nintendo for the fact that they didn't show a lot this year, which is true. I didn't see a lot being shown by Nintendo that's hitting this year. But I sure as fuck didn't see a lot being shown this year for Xbox One or PlayStation 4.
Thank you.
Exempting, of course, at least Xbox One is getting the Halo collection this year.
Yep. Sunset Overdrive hits this year, right?
Sunset Overdrive, Destiny on both platforms, you know,
right.
So, to be fair, but at the same time, in Nintendo's corner, we have motherfucking Smash Brothers, we have motherfucking Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker.
Captain Toad's Treasure Trail.
Ooh, girl. But, you know, so I feel like those kinds of complaints are unfounded and unfair.
Yeah, like, I didn't get that at all.
I feel like also, Bayonetta motherfucking 1 and 2, that's this year. Anyway. I fall into Nintendo defense mode way too easy lately.
You do remember that our fourth episode was called In Defense of Nintendo.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel, especially on like the hardcore enthusiast boards, that there was an overwhelmingly positive Nintendo sentiment this year.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of like, oh, meh, meh. Even when they were talking about, you know, like, oh, the family events, it wasn't like, oh, children's games.
Yeah, I think Nintendo knocked it out of the park this year. I'm really impressed, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, they put on a good show, good events.
And let's wrap up our Nintendo part of this talk with what were you most excited for? What are you most anticipating playing from Nintendo's announcement?
That's a tough one, but I'm going to have to go with Splatoon.
Oh, wow. Okay. And mine is, man, I have like three, and I'm like, I'm making myself lock it down to one. I'm just going to say Bayonetta 1 and 2.
Okay, yeah.
Otherwise, I would have said Amiibos.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Smash. I'm so excited for Amiibo, man. Like, the more photos of those that I see, and we talked about,
oh, they look great,
Amiibo last time, so I don't want to go too much into it, but the more photos I see, man, these figures just look phenomenal.
So, I mean, I'm excited about Amiibos and Smash and Bayonetta as well, but I think Splatoon is exciting just because it's something brand new from them, and so that's, and it was really positively received, so, woohoo!
Woohoo! Alright, let's, let's take this to the next step and take a look at Sony.
Alright. Yeah, Arkham! Yeah, Uncharted!
Woo, 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 Toot Bros! You know, I have to say, I didn't really feel much different about Sony after the event overall than I did after their press event. You know, Nintendo, I felt like they kept pulling out announcements even after their press event. They had the all-day streaming Treehouse events, which kept, you know, new information coming. We were getting insight on game design nonstop, seeing real people play these games in a real gameplay setting rather than just like a scripted on-stage demo where like literally, cause the thing is, you know, a lot of those gameplay demos aren't actual gameplay demos.
Right.
Like Homeboy will be holding forward on his control stick and literally the game is playing itself and running all animations to fool you into believing the game is being played.
Except for when Little Big Planet 3 was being played.
Yeah, right.
That clearly was them.
Right? You could tell because the game controlled just as awfully as it really does. Like, literally, Homeboy had to try to pick up his friend the dog sock as the bird, what, like 8 times?
Yeah.
So, and that's the kind of sloppy controls I've come to expect from Little Big Planet.
Now, they were talking about how their controls are going to be tighter.
Bitch, they said that about Little Big Planet 2. I'll believe it when I see it.
Ooh, them fighting words.
Nope, that's just truth. I'll buy Little Big Planet 3, but I'm not expecting very much. I just really want it to click for me this time, because that's the kind of game I should be really into.
Yeah, you know, I really agree with you when you say that your opinion of Sony didn't change. It's not like that you're like, oh, I hated Sony, and now I still hate Sony, or...
Oh, heavens no.
I love Sony. It's just like, you know, Sony is Sony, and we both love our PS4s, I would say. We're both still glad to have our PS3s hooked up. There's still good content coming for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But unlike Nintendo, whom, after their event, still had so much to do and say and show, I really felt like Sony basically covered it all in their press event. I didn't get much else out of them, and so I don't really have a lot more to say. Slaggy, how about you?
Not really.
All right, well then, even though this is a little duplicative, what overall are you most looking forward to that Sony had on display this year?
It would easily be No Man's Sky.
I'm seeing a lot of that out there, and I have to say I'm really excited for No Man's Sky as well, but probably the game I'm most looking forward to is Project Blood, which I'm refusing to use its proper name for, but I really want to get back into the Souls series, and that seems like the game that to really do it with.
Yeah, you know, the best stuff is from.
Best stuff is from. All right. Well, let's wrap this up with a discussion on Microsoft's presence at the show, and Xbox in particular. You know, they did have some stuff on the show floor that they didn't show in their press event. Most specifically was more footage of, and you know, a more in-depth gameplay demo that you could play of D4.
That's right, yeah.
What was it? Dreams Die Dark?
Deadly Dreams Don't Die, I think. Oh, wait. Dark Dreams Don't Die.
Yeah, that's the
like
one.
Like, it's much better.
Apparently, the game is looking pretty good, though. And, you know, they had apparently a lot of the Japanese titles that they're planning to push for the upcoming launch in Japan in September. Apparently, you know, they were really throwing their weight in. Microsoft was in supporting these Japanese developers, including some Japanese indies who maybe aren't getting as much love this generation as you'd think would be. So I'm really, you know, I'm actually really excited about Microsoft's presence at E3 this year. I love the Xbox One as a platform, which,
yeah,
if you had told me a year ago those were words that were going to come out of my mouth, I would have been like, what the fuck?
If you listened to our E3 blowout last year, we were like, ooh, Microsoft's E3 show was a shit show. We really didn't come around on the Xbox One until you got yours, and we played it and had a good time with it.
And you know, that's, as an aside, something I'm really happy about this show. We are always willing to give things a chance, even if they don't look up our alley. And sometimes, like this, you know, the proof is in the pudding, and for as many issues as we had with the Xbox One before it came out, it is now, you know, that and my Wii U, that's where I do most of my gaming now. So, in fact, you know, I'm going to talk about this a little later, but just today, I've spent most of the day today playing Super Time Force on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's get back on point, though. So, Sidekick, after seeing some coverage of what Microsoft had going on the floor at the show and, you know, sort of seeing maybe some D4 if you looked into that, overall, how has your opinion of Microsoft changed? And you can include the post-press event showings of Sunset Overdrive in that, because we did see more of that at the show as well.
I mean, I'm honestly more excited about what's coming for my Xbox One than what's coming for my PS4, honestly. And I know I said honestly like 5 times, but I just really feel like I need to say that over this past year, I've really come to have more of an open mind. And because Microsoft put on a good show this year, it really furthers that, you know, like, we thought that Xbone was going to be a flop. You know, we called it Xbone for lols. Now we call it that affectionately, but...
Yeah, the bone, man.
You know, I'm excited for Sunset Overdrive. I'm excited for the Fable Legends game.
Oh, yeah.
Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, Scalebound, Phantom Dust, lots of good stuff coming.
Yeah, really. And I'll be honest, I'm still flying high on that Phantom Dust announcement.
Right. Like, I really just feel, I hate to interrupt you, but I really feel like Microsoft showed more diverse content than Sony did. Sony's was a lot of like, oh, bro, Uncharted, oh, bro.
And here's Arkham. 20 minutes of Brian Michael Bendis.
Oof.
And don't get me wrong, I adore Bendis. I love his work on the vast majority of his comics that I've read. I'm a huge fan of Powers in particular, but man, I cannot overstate how big of a flub I feel that part of Sony's press event was. In any event, though, that's not what we're talking about. You can already catch our thoughts on that last week we recorded. So instead, let's move forward. Sidekick, how did your impression of Microsoft change? Is that what we just talked about? I think so.
We did.
So let's go with what, now that we've seen more overall, what are you most excited for? If you had to boil it down to just one, because you just did a whole list of things.
Yeah, that's really
for.
Tough because there's a lot that I'm looking forward to, but I think it would probably have to be Sunset Overdrive, which I know is probably one of the soonest things that is going to be released. Because you could probably tell today there's a lot of hype for it over on the SS Game Buoy. And I mean, not to diminish things like Fable Legends, but I think just because of the fun and the wow factor, or the wackiness, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really stoked for that game. My pick is still Phantom Dust. Nothing has changed.
Well, that was obvious.
But I am increasingly hyped for Sunset Overdrive. You know, now that the gloves have come off and we're getting all kinds of real details and information on this game, and I mean, even just fucking quotes about, like, if you want to be a dude in a dress, you can be a dude in a dress. That tells me already this is the kind of game I want to have exist. This is the kind of game I want to support day one. And I'm gonna pre-order it as soon as I see, like, oh, if there are any, like, pre-order incentives, I'll pick whatever one I like the most and pre-order there. I'm stoked for this game, like you said. And, you know, I hope we hear more about Phantom Dust so I can get more and more excited for that too. So, with that having been said, we've now covered the entire floor shows of all three of the big three. Why don't we, real quick, just see, Slykick, I wanna know, has your overall ranking of the big three at E3 changed?
I would say that Microsoft did a little bit better than Sony.
So before you thought Sony was better than Microsoft?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, excellent.
I mean, but it's really been a year-by-year thing. I mean, remember Sony?
Oh heavens, no, I simply mean since we talked about it last week.
Oh, no. You know, I think in terms of this year, no, I pretty much have the same opinion.
And why don't you tell me what that is one more time?
Nintendo blew it out of the park.
One more time.
Do you want to do another Daft Punk song now?
You were saying Nintendo.
Nintendo blew it out of the park. Sony wasn't bad, but could have been a little bit more solid. Microsoft was pretty solid.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I would, I do think Nintendo stole the show, but I think Microsoft came in a close second, and I think Sony lagged behind a little bit, but hey, LOL, joke's on us. They are, at the moment at least, the market leader in terms of current gen. So, you know, that's that. I think that's it for our E3 wrap-up.
E3 wrap-up, E3 wrap-up.
We have a smash here coming in from an unexpected source. Let's talk about that real quick. Smash! So, today's smash comes to you by means of Kotaku.
Say what?
Yeah, so I appreciate, you know, that we give Kotaku a lot of shit here, but, you know, I have to give credit where it's due. I do have a lot of problems with them as an organization, but they have more recently started to have some really good features, and I definitely want to highlight that. This one comes from Jason Schreier, whose name I still have some problems with. I apologize for that. But this is called Video Game Layoff Stories. And what they basically did was gave a platform, via this feature, they gave a platform for people whom have worked in the games industry and experienced some of these layoffs to anonymously talk realistically and honestly and openly about their experience going through these ordeals. And there's just five or six of these stories written by people who experienced it about how soul-crushing it is to be working in the video games industry in this day and age, sort of with the market conditions that we've been chronicling here on GameBooey for the last couple of years. And I just feel like it's a very important piece to understand, you know, if you care about this industry as much as we do here on GameBooey, then it's really worth reading this piece, seeing how these people were affected. And also above that, you know, I want to say I've worked with, at my current office, I don't work in gaming, but I'm going somewhere with this, I promise. I've worked with my current team for like 9 years, and I don't have the level of camaraderie that a lot of these games industry folk build in 3 or 4. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time with games developers. I've known people who have been in the industry for 10 plus years. I've known some of these people for 10 plus years, and it always touches my heart to see how close they all grow. And that all is something that really comes through here. You know, part of why these games are so amazing is because all of these people become so passionate about these games and the people they're working with. So it's just heart-wrenching to see how in so many instances they're treated as just like an expendable resource with no real care given for them as people. So I thought this was a really touching, great article, and I absolutely think it's worth your time.
Yeah, you know, it was heart-wrenching to read these, and it really speaks to the poor management that, I mean, you know, I think that anyone who works in a job who is kind of at the lower end of the totem pole will complain about poor management, but especially in the games industry, it just really seems to be a trend that, you know, the management level is just really poor.
Yeah, absolutely. Just absolutely.
Then on top of that, you get people like George Lucas coming in being like, they're friends!
I still can't. Anyway, with that, let's move on to happier topics and get to
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, you know, this week, I've had kind of a weird week, and I'm going to talk about my personal life a little bit. I took a vacation to Chicago and went out to visit Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast. And we saw the sights of Chicago, hit up some awesome retro gaming stores. I picked up some really cool out-of-print gaming games. I was almost going to say gaming stuff, but like, hello, those are called games. I grabbed, you know, some Neo Geo cartridges for like $12 a pop.
That's great.
Right? And I finally found sort of my elusive game that I've been hunting for years, which is Dragon Force for the Saturn.
Oh.
So that's a huge score for me. I've been looking for a copy of that for years.
Go Chicago.
So yeah, fucking go Chicago. While I was there, we played, you know, some Mario Kart. We played some Smash Brawl, which was actually very exciting.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, it was very cool. I brought my PSP, or I'm sorry, my Vita with me. I brought my 3DS with me. Played a lot of NES Virtual Console, the Mega Man series.
Oh, that's great.
Played Hatsune Miku on Vita. Finally
cute.
Put some real time into
Kawaii.
That. Yeah, so it was very cool. I finally got around to playing, and this is where I'm going to dig in a little more. Finally got around to playing Deception 4 on Vita.
Oh, okay.
And I really like it. You know, it definitely, it's very much a continuation of the Deception games from PS1. If you like those games, you will like Deception 4. You know, I saw people online complaining it's a little cheesecakey, like, oh, I don't know if we need this many, like, thigh-level camera shots of women, female characters, and male characters that we're about to, like, throw into traps and smash with giant spiked balls and put on springboards to spring into spikes that are hung on the walls. But I don't know. I actually, this is probably the one time where I feel like that kind of pseudo-exploitation, like, that is a horror trope. That belongs in that kind of creepy setting.
Spoopy.
Sort of, yeah, well, right? Like, sort of showing these characters in a more vulnerable state with sort of awkward camera angles and stuff. I like it. I think it's kind of creepy. Not, like, Outlast creepy, but just, you know, spooky, atmospheric, and a hell of a lot of fun. So I'm a big fan. I definitely intend on playing a lot more of that. And the real big game here that I really want to talk about, though, and I mentioned it here already in this episode, is Super Time Force. And this is sort of, I've been trying to think of a way to explain it all day, and you, Sidekick, are finally the person who really helped me figure out a way. And this is a game where it's sort of Contra-style side shooter run and gun with a really interesting sort of narrative conceit of time travel. So basically, at any point in the game, you press the B button, and what happens basically is the game starts rewinding, except as soon as you stop rewinding, you get to reselect which playable character you're using, and once you're replaying, the game takes off and continues playing your last run, and you can interact with the character that you just played. So if that character got killed, and now you, like, eliminate the enemy that killed him before he kills the previous you, then you'll become a more powered up version of your character for saving yourself. And at first, that seems like a really straightforward, like, oh, it's just like a mechanic based around buffs. But it comes into play because you have a very rigid time restraint on each level you're playing. And then there are, you know, time upgrades. So, like, oh, I just got a time extension. I have a little bit longer in this stage. But the game design is based around knowing you're going to get those. So the entire game becomes sort of making a team of, you know, 7 or 8 iterations of yourself running through a level as you are constantly backtracking and trying to cut seconds off of your time. So it becomes sort of almost like this metatextual take on sort of how save states and speed running has changed how we approach these styles of game design.
Yeah, I thought it was really clever, and I liked watching you kind of figure out how to adapt to situations and, like, oh, I need such and such more dudes here to kill the boss. And then, oh, if I can do this, I can grab the time thingy here. And, like, I just thought you can clearly see that they put a lot of thought into the game mechanics.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal game. This was, of course, made by Capybara, whom we've talked about a lot this year. And I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Yeah, I can't wait to go and pick it up.
It's available on the Xbox One and Xbox 360 for $15 as a download only. And again, you know, I don't normally go into all of the purchase information. I do in this case because if you have a platform that this game's available on, I cannot highly enough recommend that you dig into this game. It's really cool. Slaggy, how about you? What you been playing?
I started off my gaming weekend kind of playing the Destiny Alpha. I'm really bad at first-person shooters, but from what I saw, it looks really good. I'm really impressed, like, you know, considering that it's just an alpha right now. Like, I think a lot of people who were playing it were really, really impressed with it. You know, people who are better at these games than I am. You know, I think a lot of my issues are just because I'm not good at FPS, or at least not really good at using a controller to play FPS games. But, you know, a lot of cool ideas, and, you know, I think that if I put the time into it, it'll be a good experience. I also played a lot of Mario Kart 8. Unfortunately, by the time you hear this, it'll probably be over, but we're participating in the podcast Cross Zone Tournament. So, you know, you've probably seen it on our social media. We've been shouting it out. But unfortunately, this is the only time I've shouted it out on air, just because it's kind of developed in between. But I've been preparing for that. I have been trying to kind of find the right balance of cart and character. So hopefully by the next episode, I will be able to report good news for the podcast Cross Zone Tournament.
And hey, you know, touching on something that you were talking about a second ago with regard to Destiny, one of the cool things about that game working as it does is, hey, even if you're a little rough, if you're playing with, like, me and Seawolf Jason, like, it'll be okay if you're a little rough, because we'll carry you.
I think that's the thing, because I was unable to line up my schedule with, for example, Seawolf Jason, and so I was just trying to play solo, and I'm guessing that probably some of these encounters aren't really, especially for a newcomer, designed to be tackled solo.
Man, and I have to say, it kills me that I was out of town during this alpha. I wanted to play so bad. I'm so excited for this game. But I have no qualms about missing it to have gone out to Chicago. It was a superb trip. Amazing experience. I was very happy. But, goddammit, I cannot believe Slackick played this game before me.
Oops, poops.
You can now pick up where you were, sorry.
So I was just talking about Mario Kart, but the most recent gaming experience is that last night, Captain Spike and I played a game of Civilization V. And I decided I'd try and do a military victory, but that didn't work out very well. I did it too early in the game, tried to attack some city-states, and unfortunately, the troops from Mount My Asshole. You're there, you saw.
I know, I didn't think you were going to mention that online.
Unfortunately, you know, I put all my eggs into one basket, so to speak, and got annihilated by some of the city-states, like Geneva or something. Like, I mean, Geneva, it's not even like one of the bigger ones. And then things got so bad, I was running like a gold deficit. I had to beg Egypt for gold, and their terms were that I needed to let them have my city, Peen Isle, which I settled on a little block of island.
Of course. It was the Peen Isle.
And it didn't go well. Eventually, I just... Like, the thing is that it was the worst, in terms of my gameplay, the worst game of Civ I've ever played. But it was fun because Captain Spike was just dominating. Eventually, I knew that, like, I mean, he had 2,000 points, I had 200. And so I was just like, okay, I did a suicide mission.
And that was like 5 hours into the game.
Yeah, I did a suicide mission where I sent all my troops over to attack his capital, and they just all died. And then I basically let him have open borders on me, and I gifted him Peen Isle, which I renamed Cock and Balls. And then he was able to get the last stronghold of Egypt to officially win the game.
Yep. And that was a lot of fun. In fact, it kind of makes me want to play more.
Yeah, no more military victories for me, at least not that early on in the game.
Yeah, we'll have to go over how military units work at some point. In any event, I think we've had enough. I think we've sort of made our listeners deal with enough for this week. So let's start wrapping the show up.
They had to hear about you coming into Mount My Asshole.
Ew. Slag kick. Let's move on to the exit lewd.
Well, before that, we have two quick tweets. One was from our friend over on Twitter, Chitao16, saying, it's been a podcast palooza this morning. It was on June 11th. He said, done listening to GameBooey.org, about to finish Koopa Club. Next is VG Realness with 4 episodes. Like, ooh, girl. And similarly, before your vacation time in Chicago, Fix Your Face, a.k.a. Jeremy Johnson from the Koopa Club podcast, said, finally catching up with the Hunty Bunch 3 E3 shows. Great, great, great stuff from GameBooey.org and VG Realness. Aw, thank you. We love our Hunty Bunch. We love our listeners. And we love you, everyone in Radioland. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. We like to tumble with you on Tumblr occasionally. You can plus one us on Google Plus if you so dare. You can email us at mailbooey@gamebooey.org. All of our social links, all of our episode archive can be found over at gamebooey.org, where you can play the at-home version. We always link to the articles that we're discussing, so, you know, we don't just plop it up there with nothing. You know, maybe once in a while there's an emergency, but we try to get you all the resources that we're referring to so that you can go out there and formulate your thoughts.
Indeed. With that having been said, is it time for our shout-outs?
Shout it out.
As ever and always, I'd like to shout out to Koopa Club. That's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist. I also want to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom we steal ever so many of our cues. I'd also like to shout out to the Nintendo Fun Club podcast, as well as our presently on hiatus RuPaul's Drag Race fan podcast, reading is fundamental. In non-gaming podcasts, I'd like to shout out to the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, and X Nation over on culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Merry Mutants.
Merry Mutants? I just imagine them being like Merry Melodies, like
Well, keeping with that musical interlude, I wanna take you to a game bar!
What, that was the Merry Melodies little anthem.
I know what you were doing, but take us to a game bar.
Could you imagine if X-Men was like a 1930s cartoon?
Can you imagine if you did your shoutouts?
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and part of the Hunty Bunch. And we'll be appearing with some of our other Hunty Bunch at the Podcast Cross Zone 2 panel at Gamer X.
Woo woo!
Including members of Horde House, which is the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. And Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's top-selling MMO. Unfortunately, Girls Gone WoW will not be there, but we love them.
We do love
both of them are on the Voice of Geeks Network. That's vognetwork.com, a hub for all things gaming and geeky. Nerdgasm Network is the wildest shock jock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Video Game Outsiders is the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And last but certainly not least, the sexy Spanish language La Palanca podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. As ever and always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate Zelda melodies in a beautiful, wonderful way.
Let me be clear, girl. I'ma pour out 40s for them until we ain't using their music.
Why you wasting them in this heat? It's the summer solstice, yo.
It is. It's a summer solstice today.
Solstice party. There were gargoyles. There were sly kicks. It was ungodly.
Whatever it is, I don't want it.
The moon and the stars and the this and the that.
Anyway.
Get the hell out of my house. In Jesus' name I pray.
We are clearly losing it. So I'm going to let y'all go. Thank you so much for listening to us today. I hope you've had as much fun listening as we've had recording. It is a sincere pleasure to speak to you all about games every week. Until next time, Slackkick, do you have anything else to add? You looked like you did.
Whatever it is, I don't want it. Get the hell out of this SS Game Buoy. In Jesus' name I pray.
All right, folks. Thank you again for your time. Until next time, keep gaming. Keep thinking, and I don't have a witty statement prepared.
And last but certainly not least, the sexy Latino. Last but certainly not least. Shut up.
No, she died.
That's great. Now pour me a fucking drink.
All right. Mics are hot.
Ooh. Ahoy, babies, and welcome to the GameBaby.org video game podcast. I'm your host, Captain Slackkick, and here's my best buddy. Fuck you.
Ahoy, mateys, welcome. Stop. Ahoy, mateys, welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr time.
You motherfucker.
Ahoy, mateys. Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
That's it?
You motherfucker! I thought you were gonna do another yarr.
If you want to be in a dude in the skirt.
Sonic Toon.
Chris Journey, the senior programmer from.
I am the senior program.
What was that?
I was strumming the guitar like Linda Perry.
I don't see a guitar.
Did it just look like I was scratching my booby being like, booby, what are you doing?
All right.
You can email us at mailbooby@gamebooby.org. Mailbooby, gamebooby.org, mailbooby, gamebooby.org.